Hey, this is Keith. I'm the pastor at Truth Community Church, and I want to thank you for checking out our podcast today. Wherever you're listening from, I hope this message leads you to discover Jesus, connect with people, and serve the world. If you want to take your next step, visit us online at truthcommunity.org. Now, let's dive into the message. So how are you guys? Are you well? Good. I'm glad that you're here this morning. If you don't know me personally, my name is Keith, and I want to thank you for coming out to Truth Community Church. And if it's your first or second time visiting with us, please fill out that orange Connect card as you're sitting now. It'll take you a couple seconds. Hand it to me or hand it to a welcome team member. We have a gift we want to give you as a way of saying thank you for being here today. So I'm excited about this series. I'm excited about getting into the words of Jesus, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. There's a lot of content there, and so we're going to tackle this for 7 weeks together. We're actually going to take some breaks in a couple weeks just to kind of process all that Jesus is saying, because sometimes what Jesus says doesn't make sense, right? I would agree with that. Even if I wasn't the one saying it, I would agree with that. There are times we read what Jesus says, and so we're going to process this together and discover, man, how is it that Jesus wants us to live our lives? What is the best way for me to live my life? Now, I want to share a story with you as we get started. It took place last weekend, and it involves me and home renovation. To that point, you should be saying, why? Why do you keep pairing yourself with home renovation? Because I don't know what I'm doing, but I like to think I know what I'm doing. And truthfully, there's a part of me that wants to be Chip Gaines. So I told Amy, I think I can put in recessed lighting. I'm not an electrician. I shouldn't be around sheetrock. None of these things make sense. But I watched YouTube, and God gave us YouTube for a reason, so that people who don't know what they're doing can do things. So I watched a couple of videos, and I told her, I was like, I think I can do this. We're in the middle of kind of like updating our house. We've been there for 6 years, and so we're like starting in the living room, making it look contemporary and such. And that means get rid of floor lamps, put in recessed lighting. So I said, I think I can handle this. I called my younger brother up, and he's never done any of this stuff. So I said, look, you've never done it. I've never done it. Let's do this. It's going to involve electricity. It's going to involve holes and lights, and this should be great. So we got started around 3 o'clock, and you know, the right tools makes the job a little easier, but you also need to know what you're doing despite the tools. So we measured a million times to put them where they needed to be. Ran into a couple problems. We hit ceiling joist at one point, which is a bad thing because you can't insert a light through a ceiling joist. Thank God he created Sawzaws, so I just cut that ceiling joist out. So the integrity of my house is completely compromised. Please don't come over. But we figured out ways to make it work. We got everything wired up to each other, so we're piggybacking the lights. And I did ask someone, like, this is what YouTube says. Is this what you say? And they're like, yeah, I mean, you should be able to do this. And so we were determined, because there's nothing worse than starting something, especially when your spouse isn't fully sold on the idea that you should do it or could do it, right? Right. So I said, don't worry, we're going to do this. I'm determined. We've got this. And we worked about 6 hours from 3 to 9 with a nacho break in there, so it wasn't just straight. And then we're like, all right, now it's time. The moment we've been waiting for. To put on the live electric to the first light, so that way these things actually do what they're supposed to do. And so I go up there and I'm looking. Thankfully, like, there was already an entranceway light. So like the switch was down here. I'm in the attic. It's already there. I just need to take it from this one and put it onto the new one and then take down the old one. And thank God in that moment, like, I'm about to start playing with a live electric. And I cut it at the breaker, but I still don't trust myself. Who knows what I really did. And I start seeing these flashes of like my grandchildren and college tuition and all the, and my kids are 4 and 1. But I'm like, am I going to get to see this? I really want to be here for this. I'm about to touch electricity. And in that moment, as determined as I was, I realized I had hit the wall on determination. It didn't matter how much drive I had. It didn't matter how much I wanted to complete this project. There were two options when determination had run its course. And it was either admit defeat, give up and just have the lights be up there, but don't touch the switch. They don't do anything. They're just for show. Or it was lean into something called dependency, where you depend on another person to fulfill what you thought you could fulfill on your own. And I did not want pride to get in the way of me getting electrocuted in that moment. So I texted one of my friends. I said, look, this is where I'm at. I'm sending him pictures. I'm calling him. He's like, I'm just going to come over and finish this thing. And thank God he came over in a couple minutes. He's got it wired. Lights are up. And don't you know, who's the hero of that story? It's not me, it's him. Because it's the guy who puts the lights on that gets all the credit. But Amy was thankful that he was able to come through.
But it taught me something last week as I'm up there in the attic and I'm putting these lights in and I'm thinking through what God is sharing in my life and through my stories and thinking about you, thinking about our church, and thinking just globally. That every single one of us in this room and every single person on this planet, I believe, is an image bearer of God. We believe that. You start in the beginning of this book, and it's going to say, in the beginning, God, in the beginning, God. And it goes on to say that God creates. So God is the creator, and he creates all that we see, all that we can't see, the tiny things and the really big things. But when he gets to you, when he gets to humanity, we read that he creates us in the image of himself, meaning that he places his own qualities in humanity. And it's why maybe at times your heart has broken when you have seen or experienced broken things. When you've looked at the relationships in your life, or you've scrolled through your news feed, or you've put on the news and you see tragedy and you see pain, and there's something in you, despite what you believe or don't believe about Jesus today, there's something in you that says, you know what? This just isn't right. It's not right the way they treat those people because of the color of their skin. It's not right that all of these tragedies are happening. It's just not right. There's something that wells in us, this cry for justice. And we call out, it's not right. And the reason why you call out and the reason why I call out is because that is the image of God in us. And although sin is trying its best to mask that image and trying its best to hide the way that God created you, it is still there. And Jesus comes to remove that sin to make the image of God more visible in our lives. And I say that because if you've ever been determined to finish something, that determination came from God, because God is a determined God. There was one author in Scripture, a man named Paul, who said, he who began a good work is faithful to complete it. Meaning that if you're having a leaning into God in this moment, or you have for some years now, God is promising, I'm so determined to finish what you're feeling, I'm going to see it through. You are going to follow my son Jesus, because God is determined and he loves you. Here's the problem in all of that. As much as I may bear the qualities of God, I am not God. I'm thankful no one amened there. If my wife was up here, she would have amened. Right? I'm not God. I'm not perfect. I don't get it right. I mess up regularly. Yesterday, I messed up with my kids. I was upset with them because they were acting like kids. I asked my daughter, why are you acting like a baby? And Amy looked at me like, she is a baby. Right? We get these things wrong so often. But here's what I know. While my determination can only carry me so far, the determination of God never stops. And I want you to know today that if you're human, which I believe you are, and I'm human, I believe I am, it means that as determined as I may be in my life, there comes a point where determination runs its course. And when that comes, I've got two choices. I will admit defeat, give up, go home, call off the relationship, close down the business, just whatever it looks like in your scenario, I will admit defeat, it's over. Or I will start to depend on the God whose determination never stops. And that's where I want to land today, and it's where I want you to see that you can land today. Now, this is not a call to health and wealth. This is not a call that if you want everything to go well, then you just got to keep praying, keep believing. That kind of theology messes me up. Because I don't know if you ever prayed the prayer for someone to be healed and believed with all your heart and they weren't. What does that theology do? It crumbles. So this is not a call to be blessed in the sense that we understand it. But this is a call to live a blessed life the way Jesus defines it. And I know, I mean, I'm the biggest person in the room probably that does it. I love hashtag blessed. I mean, hashtag blessed, there's dark roast at Starbucks. Hashtag blessed, my car is running, whatever it looks like. So we use this language in society so often, but what does it mean? And can I be determined enough to get me to that blessing? Because as I survey culture, and as if I were to ask those who are apart from their creator, what does it mean to be blessed? We may get answers that push us towards, well, it's health, it's wealth, it's security, it's identity, it's accomplishment, it's all of these things. And I want to know the words of Jesus. What did Jesus say? Who did he say the blessed are? And as Jesus starts this first public message, he starts off with all of these blessed are statements. Here's who's blessed, he's saying. Here's what it means to follow me, he's saying. Here's what it means to live for God. You want to know? And he gets started, and he rallies his disciples, and the crowds come around him, and he's on this mountain, and people are sitting, and they're waiting for him to talk, and he begins with these blessed are statements. And today, if you're wondering, What does it mean to be blessed? Can I know God? What would that look like? Jesus is going to share that. Matthew heard it. Matthew records it for us. So Matthew was a man who lived for himself. He was a tax collector, meaning his society pushed him out. His Jewish people pushed him out because he worked for Rome now. But Jesus called him to follow. And while Jesus calls us to follow, things start to change when that happens. And Matthew's life started to change. And years later, he writes down what he remembers hearing on that day. And how cool is it we get to read it today? So this isn't the Bible says so. This is Matthew, a man who was called by Jesus, who heard the message, wrote it down. He's the guy. He's the one who's going to talk about what Jesus said. It's powerful. Now, I need to kind of apologize because I grew up hearing this message, and I grew up in a traditional church where it was blessed are people. Anyone blessed? We read the word blessed a couple. My brother's hand naturally would go up. Blessed are. So if I say blessed, just it's blessed. I just don't know why. Blessed sounds more powerful, so maybe I would. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So we'll see what comes out. But Matthew 5, verse 3, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, I want to read through each of these, and I want to show you what Jesus is saying here. So let's get the image. People are rallying around Jesus. They've seen him do some things, but this is really his first public, okay, what's this guy Jesus about? What's he going to say? And he stands up and says, blessed are the poor. At which we say, what are you talking about? I have yet to take a picture of my empty wallet and post it and do hashtag blessed. That doesn't work. That's not what we lean towards. Blessed are the poor. My bank account has zeros, four of them, 00.00. That's not where we go. And Jesus says, blessed are the poor. But as you can read, he's not talking about finances. He's not talking about our bank accounts or our savings accounts. And I think he's talking about something greater here, something that it should rub us the wrong way. And it would have that first century audience. Because he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Meaning, you're blessed when you realize your spirit, your heart, who you are on the inside, everything about you, it's actually poor. What he's doing is as he gets started and the crowds are listening and disciples who have declared they're following him are listening, he's saying, hey, here's a starting point for following me. You need to admit that you're spiritually bankrupt. And he's talking to a first century audience that had memorized our first five books of our Old Testament. This is what they did. They knew the Torah. They knew the law. They kept the festivals. They went to temple. They attended synagogue. All of these great deeds, they knew what God wanted. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. It was ingrained in them. And Jesus gets started and says, you want to be blessed? It's not through all of that. It's actually through admitting all of that means nothing. And it's a striking moment. And I like to think that people gasped in that moment as he is now saying the law in all of its greatness. You're living your life by it. But you need to get started by admitting you're poor in spirit. And what it looks like for us today is to realize, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. And we always compare ourselves to people. I'm not like that guy. We tend to go to the extreme and say, well, I've never killed anyone. That's like what's the standard of goodness? Have you killed someone? No, okay, I'm a good person then. And it's where we lean because we're constantly trying to elevate ourselves and compare ourselves. And Jesus gets started and said, you want to know the kingdom of heaven? You want God's kingdom to come into your life? You need to first start by saying, wow, I've got nothing to offer God. I'm poor. In my spirit, I am poor. And he builds on this because the next one he says is, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Now, I'm not someone who cries a lot. In fact, in my adult life, I've cried one time, and I should say I've wept openly and bitterly one time in my adult life, and it wasn't for moments that probably should have been. I didn't cry at my wedding, okay? I didn't cry when my son was born. I didn't cry when my daughter was born. I don't typically cry when Ben and Jerry's is on sale, although I do get the chills, if I'm honest. But there was one moment in my adult life where I cried, and it was 2 years ago. We had adopted this puppy, this tiny 8-week-old puppy, and I loved him. And I named him Goku because Dragon Ball Z is the best. And I love this puppy. And we realized a couple months into it that a young family who has a toddler. My wife was like 6 months pregnant. This was not the greatest time for us to try and raise and train a puppy. And I love this dog. I would come home and I would have to choose between my child or the dog. And oftentimes I took the dog on a walk and I just loved this puppy. But it was about 3 weeks before Amy was going to deliver Cece, and we said, we just can't do this. And so we contacted the adoption agency and said, look, we're not giving this puppy the attention that he deserves. Is there another family? And there was. And so we were able to bring the puppy back. Now, I know where puppy dog eyes comes from. Because I put the puppy in the car, and he's in the back, and he's just staring at me with those eyes. And his eyes are welling up, and I'm like, how does this dog know? Jesus, how did you make this dog know? And so I get to the adoption center, and I do all the paperwork. And as soon as I kind of turn the leash over, this wetness that I've never experienced before fills my eyeballs. And I'm wondering, what is this feeling? What is this sensation? What is going on here? And in front of adults in this room, I start to have these drops coming. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. So I'm not joking. Like a child who just lost their puppy, I run out of the room. I run down to my car, and I'm just weeping and trying not to yell until I get in the car and I start screaming about my puppy, and I'm crying, and I'm driving from home on Sunrise so much that I have to pull over on Sunrise because I can't see, because I've never experienced tears. I don't know what's happening. And I get home, and Amy looks at me, and she could see my face red, and she asks, are you okay? And I just do want to, and I go to the bathroom, and I start crying some more, and then I leave the house, and it was bad. So with all of that, you know what crying is like. You know what mourning is like. And here's the thing, though, because this is cool. What Jesus is talking about here, when he says mourn, he's not specifically talking about those moments where we cry over our present situations that are not the way they should be. Okay, so you have moments right now in your life. Your business isn't where it should be. Your health isn't where it should be. You have dreams and aspirations to start a family, to have a restored relationship in your family. All of that causes us to break down and to weep. And what I want you to understand, if I could go down this path for a minute, is in those moments, Jesus has promised that there is a comforter who comforts us, 100%. Jesus said, I'm going to send the comforter, and he's going to comfort our hearts. And when we weep, we do not weep alone. Jesus understands our brokenness in that moment. But there's something amazing happening in this second blessed are statement. Because when Jesus says the word mourn there to his first century audience, the word that he uses, that Matthew heard, that he wrote down in Greek, was this word that had this image of someone being broken over their sin, specific first century Jewish mourning over their sin. And what that looked like in this context is that when God had shown someone through the law or through a prophet, through a teacher, in this moment, Jesus, that, hey, you have sin, a first century Jew would often tear their clothes and take ashes and put it on their head as a sign of mourning, which was symbolic of them repenting, them looking at their sin and turning in a different direction towards God. Here's why this is massive. Because maybe today in your life, we've all got sin. You've got sin in your heart that you will not call sin. You'll call it an issue. You'll call it a mistake. You'll call it, I'm wrestling through this. We call it those nice, fluffy words because we don't want to call it sin, and here's why. Because if we call it sin, we're afraid that God is going to be angry with us. Because maybe you heard somewhere, well, we're all just sinners in the hands of an angry God, and he's just looking for us to slip up so he can hit us with a lightning bolt. That's the image we get. And so what do? We don't call it sin. I'm not going to be broken over it. I'm not bringing this to God. This is just an issue. Everyone does this. And we don't want to call it sin because we're afraid God's going to strike us. And it's so amazing. I already see it in my son. He'll be 4 next month. And whenever he does something, now he doesn't understand the concept of sin yet, but when he does something he knows is wrong, what does he do? You know, he hides. Or he hides it. Oftentimes I go into our playroom and he's got his hands behind his back. And I say, Nate, what's behind your back? Nothing. Okay, then show me your hands. No. Nate, what's behind your back? And out comes the pair of scissors. That's our thing right now is scissors. I'm just waiting for Cece's hair to get cut. It's going to happen. We're trying to hide all the scissors in the house. But he hides it. Because something in him has told him, if you do wrong, you should hide it. Don't confess it. Because if you confess it, it's going to be met with anger, with punishment. Dad's going to be angry. And so even in this moment, I get down on his level and I look at him. And I let him know, I'm not mad at you, buddy. I just don't want you to get hurt. I want to help you make good choices. And what I'm doing is I'm comforting him when he's broken over what he's done, when he confesses it. And look at what Jesus is promising. You want to know what blessing is? Don't hide what it is in your heart that you know just this just isn't right. Bring it to Jesus. Experience the blessing of being comforted by a God who loves you. He knows you. He wants to comfort you. He doesn't want to cast you out. He wants to bring you in. He wants you to live the life you were created to live. And so he starts off with, you've got to be poor in spirit. You've got to acknowledge that you are not as good as you think you are. I know you didn't kill anyone, but you've lied. You've hurt people. You have these daydreams of your boss getting hit by a bus. He's saying, I know what it looks like for you. Admit that you're not that good. And then bring that to God and be blessed because he wants to comfort you. And he is putting us on this path of real freedom and liberation. And he keeps going. Well, who are the blessed? Well, the blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And Jesus starts using upside down, counterintuitive language, because to be meek is not weakness, but it is to put other people's agendas ahead of our own. To say, you know what, I'll hold the door, you go. You know what, I could take the promotion, you take it. You know what, I'm really trying to get to point B here, and I've told that to get to B, I've got to climb the corporate ladder, the ends justify the means, and I've got to do what it takes. And Jesus says, no, you want to get to B? You want to inherit the earth? I know it's going to sound weird, but be meek. Be humble. Don't promote yourself. Honor other people. You will experience blessing. And he keeps going. He says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. This is great, because I'm a hangry person. Hangry people, you know what it's like. You start getting hungry and the anger comes out and the bear is there. And so Amy knows, for me and Cece, that's where we land. Nate and Amy, they don't need food. They just enjoy life. Me and Cece want to eat. And if we don't get food and we're not satisfied, there's a problem. And I love this because what Jesus is saying, if you're hungry for God, the promise is you're going to get filled. Because I've had moments in my life where it feels like this is a lie. Where I have sought God, I have prayed, I have connected with others. I'm trying to read the Bible and it feels like there's a disconnect. And what do I need to do in that moment? I need to come back to the promise of Jesus. No, Jesus, you promised that if I hunger for you, you're going to fill me. This is not in vain. I'm not going to be determined here. I'm going to depend on you and you're going to see me through this. And he keeps going, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. It's hard to show mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Jesus is just, he's not worried about behaviors as much as he is our spirit. That's why he started there. He wants the root issue to be changed, not the behavioral byproduct. He wants what's in here. And so he says, pure in heart, see God. We tend to think, well, if I'm religious, I see God. If I do things, I see God. And we look at our behaviors. You get your sticker chart out. Did I go to church? How many times? Did I give? Did I serve? Who did I love this week? And Jesus says, no, pure in heart, see God. And truthfully, this one, out of all of these, as I was sitting and praying, this one, the Holy Spirit was like, where's your heart at? One way to ask it is, why do you do what you do? What's your motivation? And I realized, even when it comes to my children, I could be more concerned in a public place that my kids are not listening because people are looking at me. And my motivation is we got to get these kids quiet because everyone's looking at us. Shh, quiet. I don't care what they're going through. They could be going through something internally that they need comfort over. And instead, my motivation is, well, my reputation and my image in this moment. You see how easy it is for our hearts to be jacked up? And Jesus is saying, you want to be blessed, you need a pure heart. Well, how can I do that? And he keeps going. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. I don't think this one applies if you're on the southern state. You don't have to be peaceful. That is the road to nowhere. But it's hard to be peaceful. It's hard to go to the office tomorrow and be a person of peace. It's hard for you to be around your family and be a person that promotes peace. And he's saying, you want the blessing of being called a child of God? Your agenda needs to be peacemaking, not promoting yourself. And then he finishes up, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he explains this one. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you. Because of me, Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And that's kind of where we're going to pause and next week pick up. Because Jesus' opening remarks in one of his first public messages, as he's getting ready to share with the disciples and the crowds, those who say, I'm following, and those who are amazed and say, okay, maybe I'm going to lean into this. He starts off with these, you want to be blessed? You want to know what it means to be blessed? Let me show you. And all of this is so countercultural to what they know. Think about the peacemaking thing. This is first century Jewish audience who has been under Roman rule. Jerusalem is an occupied territory, and their hope is that God is going to send them this military Messiah who's going to roll into Jerusalem and take down Caesar. And Jesus' first sermon is, oh yeah, peacemaking. How did that go over for them? We got to make this real. I like to think some people are like, all right, let's get out of here. This guy is not the guy to take care of Rome for us. Because he's promoting this way of living that seems so opposite. And yet you know, and I know, and his listeners knew, and God knows this is the best way for you to live your life. You want to be blessed, this is what it looks like. Now, you cannot be determined enough to receive what Jesus is promising here. I can't be determined enough to be a child of God. I can't resolve enough to inherit the earth, to know the kingdom. Determination won't get me there. See, look at all those things that we just talked about. We need to admit I'm not that good. I stop at number one. I can't even do that through determination. I want to say I'm not that bad. Okay, you need to mourn over your way of living. You need to prioritize other people's agendas. Desire God's standard. Replace revenge with mercy. Have pure motives. Promote peace and rejoice in persecution. Keith cannot be determined enough to achieve any of those things, and definitely not all of them. But I want to be blessed by God. But I want to be called a child of God. But I want to inherit the earth. But I want to know the kingdom of heaven. I want what Jesus says, there are great reward in heaven. So what we need to do is we need to start at number one, because that's the launching pad, and say, okay, determination won't get me there, but dependence will. Trusting in Jesus, who perfectly fulfills all of these blessed are statements. Jesus' spirit was broken. Jesus mourned over our sin. He died to pay the penalty of it. Jesus was hungry and thirsty. On the cross, he cried out, I'm thirsty. Jesus fulfills these things so that you and I can stop trying and start trusting. The only way I'm going to admit I'm not that good is to know I have a good Savior who has fulfilled all of these things and now makes these blessings available to me. And they're available to you. And Jesus loves you. And I know it's a played out phrase. Jesus loves me. I know he does. No, he loves you. He wants you to be blessed the way he defines it. It may not translate into your horizontal being changed, but your vertical with God is going to be completely altered. And that means when you go through things, because you will, you go through them differently. Because you know, wait, my reward is in heaven. My blessing is in Jesus. And I love how Jesus says it there at the end. He says, the prophets who were persecuted before you, I think foreshadowing the truth, that after this sermon and some years later, Jesus, the greatest prophet, would be persecuted in a way like no one else ever had been. In a way that you and I never will be. Because Jesus was persecuted so that we could be brought near to God. And so today, you get to decide, will it be determination? Will it be defeat, or will you depend on the God who loves you?